Hi, and welcome to episode 70 of Fresh Out of Tokens podcast. This is Tanya, also known as Cipher of Tyr, and over yonder in the great across the great digital divide is David. Hi, David.
Hello. Good morning.
Well, afternoon for me, but we won't split hairs. It feels like morning. It feels like I've just got the day started. And we finally have with us our fabulous musical guest, Mike Moody. Hi, Mike.
Hello. It's 8:45 p.m. for me. I don't know what you're talking about with the morning. but I'm feeling pretty bright considering what time it is.
Yay.
And I think I'm probably the healthiest one on this call. Although I'm recovering from a cold myself, but at least I'm on well out the back end of it.
Yeah, between travel and being sick and the effects of being sick, who knows what will happen on this episode. And poor David has been sick as well. So we'll get through it. It will be okay. We're professionals. Sort of, kind of. We'll do it. So let's get through the intro. So for those listening, if it's your first time or 70th time checking us out, we have teas and other items in the I Need Diverse Games Spreadshirt shop, where we split the profits 50-50 with our friend Chachi Bobinks. We have a blog to complement the show, so follow us over at outoftokenscast.com. If you have questions, compliments, episode, or guest feedback, feel free to drop us a note over at freshoutoftokenscast.com, and please follow us at Twitter at outoftokenscast. And I get to say it because you're here. Our musical accompaniment for every episode is provided by our lovely guest, Mike Moody, where you can hear more of her work at soundcloud.com/MikeMoody-1.
It's so cool to be on a show for which I did the music. I hope you're still enjoying it. I hope everyone is still enjoying it, including the listeners. And if you ever get tired of it, I am always ready to do something new.
Awesome. And listeners who also have podcasts, you know, you could hit up Mike for more of her work.
Yeah.
So I have no shame. Here, hire Mike for some more music.
Thank you. I also have no shame. I am very ready to take commissions for anything, especially podcast openings. I know podcast openings pretty well. I have done podcast openings for both people on this call separately, and I think they're both pretty satisfied. So, yes. You know, let me know.
Definitely. And we'll have a way to contact you in the show notes as well. So I know who you are, Mike, but for those listening who may not be aware of what you do and who you are, I told you all I could not speak well today. Can you give folks a bit of that?
Sure. Again, Mike, I'm 25, 26 in just over 2 months. Goodness me. I'm from the UK, obviously. I live in the Midlands, which is right in the middle of the UK. I first came to prominence, but that's extremely highfalutin. The first thing I did that some people might know of is that me and my wonderful friend Emily have done a podcast called Castle to Castle, A Tale of Two Disnerds, which was really our journey through Disney fandom. We started that in 2011, January, February 2011, and continued on and off until last year, and we've been on an extended hiatus, which we do sometimes since then. But that's great fun. You know, you can go back to castletocastle.libsyn.com at any time and listen back to any of our episodes. It's kind of weird to listen back to me because a lot has changed personally for both of us since we last recorded an episode. And in fact, I think to be honest, the episode that is still not finished editing is the one on which you and Kiva Bay, our good mutual friend, and David's wonderful wife, guested. You two were on an episode last summer and I still haven't finished that episode, and I apologize profusely. But since Castle to Castle has been on hiatus, I sort of got more into music composition. That's what I do. I just did a master's degree in writing musical theatre, where I tried to do a bit of music and didn't quite manage to do as much musically as I hoped, but I'll maybe talk about that a bit later. And I'm a video games fan, particularly when it comes to music. Music is a big part of games. Games have been a big part of giving me my musical taste. And I'm also, very briefly, trans. I am sometimes agender, but mostly female. I go by she, her pronouns. And I've kept my name for the moment. I like Mike. It is me. That's basically me.
Awesome. Well, I'm really happy that you're here, and don't worry about the episode. I mean, editing the show is up to me, who knows if we'd still have a show, because I'm terrible at it, so I can't talk.
Editing is fun.
Sarcasm, I sense it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. It takes less time the more you do it, but it still takes more time than it takes to listen to an episode by, like, an order of magnitude.
I mean, my average editing time, to briefly carry on talking shop, is about 7 hours per episode. Last I did one. Which feels way too long, but I never managed to trim it down.
Yeah, I think I average around 5 hours at this point, but but that's only if everything goes right. So, Mike, our second question is usually, so what is your gaming origin story, or what got you into gaming?
Well, I can't honestly think of what the first thing I played was, but it was all the things that got me hooked were watching other people play Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time, and a few other N64 games, Super Mario 64. The thing that really got me hooked in terms of me playing it was Spyro the Dragon, the first game, and that was, as I alluded to a bit earlier, so much to do with the music. Stuart Copeland's soundtrack for, well, all three of the original games, but especially the first game, really hooked me. I don't know how much I would have been into playing that game if I hadn't really loved the soundtrack when I was 7 or 8. And the big thing about games was that I didn't have a console at home for a while. I got a Game Boy Pocket at some point, with a few games, including Kirby's Dream Land, which is another favourite. But most of my exposure to games was in hospital, when I was going in hospital a lot, and there would be a PS1 or an N64 on a tray with a TV that would get wheeled around, and I'd play stuff. I remember playing the PlayStation game adaptation of Disney's Hercules as well when I was 8, that sort of thing. And then eventually I got my own GameCube and took it to hospital sometimes, and I played through at least half of Majora's Mask in hospital in 2003, 2004. So hospital was a lot to do with my gaming beginnings and music.
Do you, did you kind of keep up with the console generations, or did you stick with the older consoles?
I did, basically. I got a PS2 about the time it was a thing. I got a GameCube and Wind Waker in 2003. But I guess I wasn't really sort of focusing on the generations until then, and then I sort of got hooked. I got a Wii. I didn't get a PS3 until last year. I also got a PS4 last year. We spent quite a lot of money on games last year. But So there are quite a lot of consoles in the house now. For now, we're sort of excuse me. For now, Rosie, my girlfriend, and I are sort of hanging. We're not quite sticking to the generations except for Nintendo. Like, we're not automatically going to get the next PS PlayStation thing, and we have a 360, and that's about all we need for Xbox for now. We're pretty Nintendo focused. We're very interested to see when Nintendo finally pull their finger out and tell us stuff about the Wii U, about the NX even, rather.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll even if, you know, even if money's not an issue by then, I'm not sure I'll go with the NX
Sure.
because I haven't really got a lot of use out of my Wii U.
No. We're pretty hardcore about Nintendo to the exclusion of quite a lot else, actually. And even we don't get as much use out of the Wii U as maybe we wish we did. But I still play a bunch of Super Smash Bros. 4 and a bunch of other things. But what I've found that's happened with the Wii U is that pretty much all of my favourite games that have been originally on Wii U have been ported to the 3DS, which I kind of prefer.
Huh. I keep thinking
So
about a 3DS, but I'm not sure.
I think it's possibly my favorite console that I own or have owned, because I can have pretty much all of my favorite Nintendo games on there. And you know, including a bunch of these a bunch of these Wii U games, like Smash Bros. Again, Yoshi's Woolly World, Hyrule Warriors, etc. Well, and you know, there's always a Mario Kart for 3DS and a bunch of other 3DS exclusive stuff that I love. But I'm very interested to see what happens with the NX.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be interested, but I keep leaning more and more for trading in the Wii U for a 3DS and seeing what I can get for it because with all the travel I've wound up doing, it might be worth it.
I think that I would, if you're not getting much use out of the Wii U and you're interested in the 3DS and you, I know you do a bunch of traveling, I think that's a sound investment, honestly.
Yeah, that might have to be the next move. But before we get too caught up in our love of Nintendo, you know, a lot of what you do is involving music, you know, including the music for our show, for other shows, and for other projects. So I was wondering what got you involved in music as well, you know, beside gaming?
I don't know if it's because my hearing that I have a condition that has affected a bunch of my stuff, a bunch of things about me. I don't have a sense of smell, for instance, but that includes I have poor hearing to some degree. I don't know if that meant that I treasured it a bit more. I don't know. I'm not sure how far down that road I'm willing to go, but I just always have loved music. Including, like, when all the things the films I would watch from an early age were all musicals, whether that was Disney or excuse me, things like The Sound of Music. In fact, it was incredibly weird when I first saw the original trilogy of Star Wars, and it was the first time I'd seen a film that was significant to me that had no songs at all. That was so weird. But music was just really important, and there were lots of times in hospital, again, when I would be blinded for some reason. Either I had a full head bandage on, or my eyes were sewn shut, or something, and I would have to get entertainment, I would have to listen to stuff, including music. But it took me a long time for me to realize that I could actually write music and take part in music. I started playing drums just over 12 years ago, and I thought that's all I could ever do. But then 3 years ago, I started trying to record very simple, silly cover versions of stuff. And then I realized I could write my own stuff and kept going doing that. And Now I'm trying to record my own album of original material, so there we go.
Cool. I think that David's next question kind of follows up with what I was asking, because I'm a nerd for that kind of stuff, and I will totally derail the podcast if I start getting deep in the weeds about music. So your turn, David.
All right. So you've done some collaborating on music with folks, including Not Your Mama's Gamer for Invisibility Blues, which is something we've, you know, tried to keep up with.
Yeah.
How did that come about? I actually don't know this story. This hasn't come up before.
I actually had to be reminded of this story by my collaborator, Tim. Because I do a project and then I just sort of forget about the details of how it started. Especially if it's over a year ago. So, Tim was initially going to write a tribute song for this project when Not Your Mama's Gamer had announced it. And he was talking about Invisibility Blues as a blues number and figuring out musical stuff, and I reminded him that I wrote lyrics, and he invited me to collaborate, and he sent me stuff, and I would write lyrics for it, and also try a bit of keyboard work and drums, and we sent it back and forth, and he liked what I did. I produced it as well. I did some mixing and made sure it sounded good, and we gave it to Not Your Mama's Gamer, and they liked it so much, I think, that they decided to adopt it as their official theme, which was amazing, because then it was on the Kickstarter, and it was just like, wow, that's a lot of people listening to our music.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, so it wasn't a commission or anything. We were just thinking this would be nice to give to them to say thank you and we appreciate what you're doing, I guess. And they were so gracious.
Yeah, they're awesome. And we will eventually have them on the show, too. But as we know, scheduling is hard. So knowing that, you know, music was something that was always important to you, I was wondering, what is it that you love about game music?
This is a really tricky question. I don't know how exactly true to the question I'm going to give an answer. I think it's about scene setting and environment and how it gives you a sense of where you're supposed to be in the game. Like, a couple of weeks ago on Twitter, I was thinking about, again, going back to Spyro and Stuart Copeland's music. One of my absolute favourite pieces of music ever, and I think a truly formative piece of music for me, is the music that Stuart Copeland composed for the level Dark Hollow, which I think is the third level in the game total. It's in the first world, Artisans. It's the one for people who've played Spyro but don't necessarily remember. In Artisans, where you go through the little maze, and it's a night setting, and it's just such a wonderful, calming, evocative piece of music. And I've found that almost everything that I enjoy in music, any piece of music or song that I love, I am hearing echoes of that piece in the piece of music, the new piece of music. I'm hearing echoes of Dark Hollow wherever I go, which is so odd, but it was just so atmospheric. That piece was so strong, and it got it, you know, I think it's about how it gels with the setting, how the music works with the setting, with the action, with the lighting and the shading and everything that goes into making a video game level. And, you know, then of course it expanded to things like playing a GTA game, particularly for me, Vice City and San Andreas, and the real world music on the radio, and how that echoes your, you know, the real life experience of hearing a piece of music in a particular location and linking that music always to that location, and you get a simulacrum of that in a video game. And I don't know, I just love how music affects a person emotionally and mentally, and especially when it's connected so perfectly to a situation. And I guess the difference is that the difference and the beauty is that in video games it's all purposeful. It's all about writing music to sound good in that moment. But to me it's about writing music to sound good in that moment, but also evoke the sense that hearing a good piece of music in real life gives. I'm explaining this in a very odd way, but it's about how it makes you feel. And beyond that, it's actually quite hard to explain.
I know, that's totally fine. Sometimes, you know, there's never an easy way to explain why you got into something or why you love something.
I mean, I loved the things I remember most about and most fondly about GTA games, and particularly those two, are just driving around listening to the piece of, to the radio, and seeing the day progress and the landscape change. And I have to say, those aren't experiences that I've managed to replicate in successive GTA games.
What do you mean by that? Do you mean like the more recent games in the series, or the games that are like it?
The more recent games in the series. I don't know if it is about that whole thing about starting with GTA 4, the transition to the more realistic setting, but something changed at that point, and I started not feeling that connection in the same way.
Interesting. But yeah, so I guess we should ask, what game would you compose for if given the chance? What game would you want to work for?
I've been trying to think about this for ages. I think it would be a really atmospheric platformer like Spyro or the original Jak and Daxter. Something with really interesting environments and beyond that, I can't really say, but I feel like the most interesting thing would be something of that ilk.
Huh. Interesting. I mean, and that actually kind of goes right into our next question, which is, do you think a game score can make or break it for a player?
Well, I'm compromised on this question, absolutely, for me. I mean, it's not necessarily for me so much that it will make or break a game. I won't, if a game's mechanics are enjoyable enough, I will still enjoy it. But it will graduate to love if I love the music. And I suppose to a degree, subconsciously, I am hoping every time that a game has music that I enjoy. I do hold that standard is higher for Nintendo games, I think, probably, because their music is so consistently good, especially things like Zelda. And I mean, part of the reason I wish Nintendo would make a new Super Mario Galaxy type game is because I love the music so much in the Super Mario Galaxy games. And Zelda, Legend of Zelda games, I think, would be a game where I'm actively awaiting the game for the music, amongst other things.
Huh. For me, it really depends, because I've noticed sound design a lot more in games that I'm playing. or games that I watch friends stream. And music can absolutely, for me, make or break it. Like, Virginia would not be the same game without the music.
Sure.
Since there's no dialogue.
Yeah. Yeah, those are definitely times, those are definitely the moments when the absence of music and the specificity of the music are important.
Yeah, I don't think, like, The Witcher 3 would be the game it is without the score it has.
I think, having played a good deal of The Witcher 3 finally this summer, I think I agree. I also think there's something to be said for some games of that ilk for more music and more variation in music, because often music in sandbox games can get very samey. Like Skyrim, for instance, when I was playing Skyrim a couple of years ago, I got quite bored with the music. And when I get bored with the music, it either fades into the background or it starts to impact things negatively.
Huh. Interesting. What about you, David? How does music impact you playing a game?
It's not something I really think about much. I definitely noticed, like, there was, like, did you ever play, Left 4 Dead?
Yes.
The musical accompaniment is actually quite, dynamic, and, because it's governed by, like, the same programming language of the director thing that it does, where it'll... how do I explain it? I went through their commentary on it at one point. They have, like, different versions of the same, chord progression and so on that they... So everything sort of flows into each other, and it's... I always found that really fascinating, but I don't know.
Huh.
Those things
are less coherent than I should be today.
I think honestly we're all recovering from cult or from bad stuff, so we can let ourselves off the hook. One game I've been playing actually that you just reminded me of is Just Cause 3, which has a very dynamic soundtrack, with, like, a general always running theme that comes and goes as you're playing, and then as the action changes when you're liberating a town or a military installation or whatever, the feelings rise, the more instruments and orchestration get added. The themes remain the same, but it becomes more, it builds. And that's, I enjoy that a lot.
Huh. Interesting. Well, games and other media are very, very different in terms of creating for them. And actually, I think that would be a great segue into our next question. David, if you'd like to take that one.
Kiva actually said last night, it's like, make sure you ask about this. So I'm glad we wrote this down. You have done the music for Harmony Park, which has finished its run a couple weeks ago. How was composing for a stage... We got a red line there, hold on. How was composing for stage musicals different than other kinds of production?
It was so difficult that I actually ended up not writing the music for the final production. So here's the thing. I started out to clear things up completely. The music for the final show that went on a couple of weeks ago was written by my wonderful collaborator who came with our director, Ashley Walsh, who has been part of the production for ages now. Well, comparatively ages. The whole thing is only just over a year old, just under a year old. But the story is that I initially went into my master's degree hoping, expecting, intending to write everything for whatever show I ended up writing, because I knew I could write music, I knew I could write lyrics, I knew I could write a story and a script. And so I started doing all this, and it gradually became apparent that writing music for musical theatre, which is all about telegraphing very specific things, not just in lyrics, but in music, was actually a bit more than I could do at the stage that my compositional abilities were at. And it was giving me more trouble than was necessary, especially since this was a master's degree that I was going to be marked on. And I decided to give up the music. And luckily, we had Ashley on board already because he was helping out with music, because I can't read stuff, I can't read music. He was translating stuff I was giving him into actual musical language. So he was incredibly helpful, and he knew what we were doing, he knew what I wanted, and we gave it all to him, and he did an amazing job. And I've had people who have seen the show tell me that it sounds like me, which is A, nice, but B, I don't want to erase Ashley's fantastic and individual work. But I did write the story, I wrote the lyrics, I wrote the dialogue. It's my work, and it was a fantastic experience, and it taught me a lot about music. It taught me a lot about writing theatrical music, and to have Ashley as someone to look up to in musical terms, as someone to collaborate with, was a fantastic experience. And hopefully there will be more to Harmony Park in the future, because I'm not done with it. I don't think any of us who worked on it are done with it. And I think there's an appetite from the people who saw it to see more. And I want more people to see it, because it was only on 3 performances, 70 people each, and it was a real buzz. You know, we were in a theatre just around the corner from Cambridge Circus, which is just at the top of Shaftesbury Avenue, and the Palace Theatre, which is on Cambridge Circus, was showing Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. So we were just around the corner from probably the biggest ticket that isn't Hamilton in the world, which was amazing. Our little show and the other shows who were part of the Goldsmiths Master's degree were there, and we did it. We did that thing. And though I didn't manage to complete what I wanted to do in terms of doing the music for this, one day I will. One day I'll write music for theatre. And then in the meantime, I'm just going to continue doing what I do. And I had an amazing time doing what I did with Harmony Park.
Awesome. Well, definitely looking forward to hearing more of that and hearing more of what you work on, because I'm sure that will not be the last thing that you do.
Oh, definitely not.
And speaking of things that you do, I'm curious because, hey, you have a podcast about Disney stuff, and I grew up with Disney stuff, and you talk about diversity in it. And yes, it's been on hiatus. Yes, and it's awesome because a lot of people don't think about diversity and Disney in the same breath, as we know. So the big question for me is, will Castle Castle ever return? We certainly hope so.
Well, I think both Emily and I, Emily, my wonderful co-host, hope so as well. While we were in Oregon, primarily actually to see Kiva and David for their wedding, which was an amazing experience, by the way, while we were in Oregon, we did record a very brief hello for everyone who listens and has been listening out for more from us. We're not gone. We will be back. There are discussions going on that require more spoons than either of us have had for the last couple of weeks. And I'm sure everyone knows what that's like. So, and now that I'm done with my masters and back home for however long I'm back home, because university really fucks with recording podcasts, especially when you're 9 hours apart. It's really hard. It's really difficult. And the thing was, I hoped that it wouldn't screw with us this time, but it did. And it was actually okay. So much has changed on personal levels for both Emily and I that it's actually kind of hard for me to imagine listening back to some of our episodes. Because we were quite different. We were extraordinarily different people in 2011, and we were still pretty different people last year. So if we come back, when we come back, I expect it'll still be castle to castle, but it will be new. It'll be fresh. It'll be a different thing. And we want to spend the time to make it good. And yeah, so hopefully soon. And we will keep everyone posted.
Awesome. Well, I am very excited for you to come back.
We're excited to be back at some point.
Yeah, I certainly, yeah, hope you record more Castle to Castle. But, you know, other than that, is there anything else that's coming up for you?
Well,
anything else you're working on?
I'm recording a solo album at the moment in the same studio using the same instruments that I do podcast themes for. All my own work, all my own songs, about 11 or 12, maybe 10. I was initially looking at November to release that. I've sort of backed down from a commitment just because I want to take my time in terms of making it good and working out what distribution possibilities are available. But hopefully before the end of the year, before mid-December, there will be an album that I will have made and that I'm proud of. I'm going to toot my own horn. I'm already very proud of what I've done with it. It sounds really good. I'm excited for other people to hear it. I keep wanting to play my girlfriend some stuff that I'm doing, but I'm enjoying withholding it as well. Otherwise, I'm applying to a bunch of courses and projects and stuff, trying to get my music and my writing out there, trying to work out what's next. But the concrete thing is the album, and I will obviously be keeping people posted about that. If people follow me on Twitter, I sometimes talk about it under the hashtag MikeTheAlbum. And it's fun to do it, and it's fun to keep people informed.
Tim, our buddy Tim, who's been on the show recently again, had a few questions for you. His first was, what is your favorite part of the composition process?
That's changed along with how I compose has changed, because I used to purely compose in my head when I was just picking things out on the keyboard. But now that my keyboard ability, at least playing with my right hand, has got better, I started actually composing with my piano. I think my favourite part, after having said all that, is when it all starts to come together. When I've got a framework of rhythm and a basic melody to hang more stuff on, and it starts coming together, and it starts sounding really good, that's my favourite part. And then just adding stuff and taking away stuff until it's as good as it can be. It's all good, but I think the moment when it's a audible framework that you can start, that sounds good enough to add stuff to, is the best part.
Cool. I know very little about music. I took up a few instruments as a kid, and I still got a guitar that is basically gathering dust in my apartment, so all of that is always interesting. no real talent for it. I like it. I like to think I can at least knock out a quick tune, but I'm really bad at it.
See, with anyone who says that, I just think that I would have said that a few years ago, and I'm getting better all the time. If it's not something that you're quite there enough to do it every day, and I don't know, like anything, but it's fun. I enjoy it, and I guess what I'm trying to say is that I wish everyone who ever said what you said would give it that one more extra try, because I think they'd all enjoy what happened.
True. You know, it's just, it's the old, I wanted to do this thing, and I tried it, and then I didn't put in the work, so that's why I'm bad at it.
And the work is necessary. I mean, I still need to actually go and get myself piano lessons, because I'm sure I'm learning a bunch of terrible technique and habits that I don't need, and I need to stamp out before I carry on. The work is necessary. It's, you know, it's always necessary, and it's much, much easier if you enjoy it and if you're getting results and a product that you enjoy. And I know that not everyone has the time or the energy to put in that work.
True. Speaking of work, I think Tim's next question is, and since David may or may not have more musical talent than I do, I'll let him take that one, because I don't actually know what a libretto is.
I absolutely don't. The only music I've ever played was punk music, and you don't need to be good for that. Tim's second question is, how did you approach writing a libretto for stage differently from writing, like, multiple game soundtracks?
So, when I use the term libretto, it literally just means the dialogue and lyrics and stage directions. Sometimes the dialogue and stage directions for a musical are also referred to as the book. So someone might be a book writer or referred to as having written the book and lyrics. And the combination of that is generally known as a libretto. My undergrad degree was in creative writing, and what I thought I was best at for most of my life was writing text, prose, lyrics, maybe script. So, in a way, writing a libretto was more naturally easy, although that's a bad way to describe it, because it's what I'd been doing, what I'd been thinking I was best at for ages. But it's also pretty hard because you still never know if you're writing the right thing, if that line is correct. And then you produce. On this course, I was working with another student who was a producer, and we were also working with our wonderful director. And each of them had notes for me and changes, especially our director. And it's all about being malleable and collaborating, working together with those people to make the libretto the best that it can be. And it is different. I mean, it's different to writing music because it's on the other side. It's writing a libretto is writing dialogue and lyrics that work with music. And it's especially an interesting job when you have to write with music that is written by someone else.
Yeah, working with anyone else's creation is a little different than when you have total control over it.
I mean, what helped was that, again, the setting, the characters, everything was from me. So, I mean, really, the music was in service to my ideas, but then my lyrics and dialogue had to work well with the music in turn. So it was a lot of back and forth. And I think we did a good job.
Stuff is just always interesting to me because, like I said, the little bit of work I put into it is nothing compared to, you know, like people who have made it a career or making it a career. Well, speaking of working and music, Tim's next question was, what is the most challenging part of composing a new piece?
I really think it is just starting. Just having the idea, finding the idea. Like, if it's a... half of my things will be a melodic idea that I've had, and the other half will be a prompt. And the hardest part is when it's a prompt and I don't necessarily have a melodic idea, because then it's about trying to find that idea, whether it's in my head or going to the keyboard and trying to pick it out. That's definitely the hardest part. And the reason that the earlier part that I mentioned as the most satisfying part is so satisfying is because it's having worked out that part, getting over that hurdle is the satisfying part.
True.
So Tim's last question is, if you could provide the score to a film, what type of film would you most like to score?
I think it would have to be a family animation, a Disney type film or something. And I sort of differentiate my Disney films in almost in Shakespearean terms, but not comedy or tragedy. My favourite, as a very brief aside to explain what I'm talking about, my favourite Shakespeare that I've experienced in any capacity is The Winter's Tale. And sometimes that is described as a romance rather than a comedy or a tragedy, because it has elements of both. And so I sort of separate Disney films and other family features into comedies and romances in terms of whether there's more an emphasis on comedy and hijinks and caper-type stuff, or whether there's more an emphasis on emotions and feelings. Not necessarily romance, but a sort of stronger emotional connection. And my favourite of them are the more emotionally connected films. And so I think my ultimate film scoring job would be something along those lines. A film like Beauty and the Beast or Hunchback of Notre Dame, Princess and the Frog. I even count The Great Mouse Detective on that sort of thing. Something where the emotions and the feelings are to the fore, but it's also, you know, enjoyable and wholesome and good-natured and uplifting.
I would really love to see something you've scored, because, you know, your music is really good, and for me, the score can be kind of a deal-breaker.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, if the mood is not set right, if the climactic moment has the wrong tone, it could just take me out of the moment.
I mean, my favourite films, again, are my favourite films, just like games, because the music is so strong. Beauty and the Beast is my favourite Disney animation, because the music is so perfectly done by Alan Menken. And WALL-E is my favourite Pixar, and possibly my favourite film, because Thomas Newman's music is so perfect for the whole film, especially for the first 35 minutes where there is no real dialogue, so perfectly done. And then the end credits song by Peter Gabriel, Down to Earth, is so perfectly placed and so thematically correct, and also telegraphed earlier in the score in collaboration with Thomas Newman, that it just makes that film.
True. I'm trying to think of what films that have had a great score really impacted me, and of course I'm drawing a total blank, because when I need to know these things, I can never think of a single title. But I'm sure I'll think of something before this episode airs. So sadly, we're almost to the end of our episode, and one way we like to wind down and kind of cleanse the palate, especially if we got a little heavy during the episode, is talk about what we are playing, reading, or watching. And Mike, since you are our lovely guest, you get to go first.
So, I took up Animal Crossing New Leaf on the 3DS again recently. I played it for about 3 months when it came out, and then, as I think, I hope I'm not the only one, I got a bit of burnout because it's the sort of game you play every day. But I've never, for those who know how Animal Crossing works, I've never seen it, and for those who don't, it's a game where it's in real time and the season changes as the seasons change. I've never seen winter, I've never seen Christmas in Animal Crossing, and I really want to see that, especially before the generations change and maybe we get a new one. So I took that up again and I'm having fun on Animal Crossing. I'm also playing Metal Gear Solid 3, Snake Eater. My girlfriend Rosie is considering playing Metal Gear Solid 5, Phantom Pain. And so we basically went through the whole series watching edited films of the cutscenes and some gameplay of the entire series. We're about halfway through Peace Walker now, and it made me want to play through the series myself. I played through most of the games, but this time I'm going to play through it in terms of the game's chronology. So I'm starting with Snake Eater since that's the first one in the timeline. And soon I'm going to start playing Ni No Kuni for the PS3 again, a level 5 RPG that is really fun, but it's a game, some games I play are very tied to the season when I started them. So I started playing Ni No Kuni about this time last year. I played it for a couple of months. I fell off, stopped playing it. And it felt weird to try and start playing it again until it came back to October. And it's another game. It's a game with really fun music, fantastic animated cutscenes from Studio Ghibli, really great art direction, really feels like a good, fun game. And I'm looking forward to playing it again. I kind of cheated with this question because I haven't started playing it again actually, but it's also a reminder for me to start playing it soon when I listen back to this episode.
No worries. I basically am just waiting for Mafia 3 to show up at my door and then no one will see me again.
Yeah, I read the interview Austin Walker did last week with one of the devs, and it made me, I mean, I was somewhat interested, made me even more interested. I probably won't pick it up in the next couple of months, but I might pick up Mafia 3 when it's a bit lower in price.
Yeah. I mean, I've been excited for this game for a while, yeah. And by the time this airs, the game will be out, so hopefully we will have some more thoughts on it by the time we record again. David, what have you been up to?
Well, I've mostly been, like, in bed, but I have played a little bit of Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, which I started playing again because of, kind of because of Luke Cage. I don't know how to explain that.
That's an interesting connection.
You know, I have mostly, like, good memories about it. And apparently, I read this earlier, it is apparently still the video game with the most voice actors, with 861 credited voice actors.
Wow.
What? That's everyone who ever did any voice ever.
Yeah, I have been very strongly considering replaying Vice City because, I mean, it was like 12 years ago or so, or more, but it's those are the sort of games that you can't replay very easily, but certainly I don't think it's time for me to replay San Andreas just yet. It felt like a huge game at the time.
Yeah, I haven't even, like, left the first town. The LA bit.
Yeah, Los Santos.
I also discovered that if you do the burglary like side mission, the game only like stores the memory for one interior at a time. So if you like find an apartment complex and you go into an apartment and you rob them, and then you go to the apartment across the street, the first one resets, so you can just run back and forth all night.
Oh wow! I don't think I ever did. I mean, I did the robbery that was in
the one that was mandatory, the tutorial one.
Another one. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I really ever did it the first time around either.
Yeah, what else have you been playing?
Well, my roommate had an extra copy of Devil Daggers, so I'm probably going to... I haven't actually played it. I started to, but then I fell asleep. So I'll probably play that later tonight, and it seems to get good reviews.
What's it about?
It's like an old Doom game. I'm not really the... How do I... Let me... It's like a retro first-person shooter thing. You're like in an arena and there are monsters.
What system is it for?
Well, it's on Steam for like $5.
Okay. I can add it to my list of Steam games that I buy and never play.
And Tanya, what have you been up to?
I actually got to play some Masquerada. I got to meet the devs at PAX West, and the full game released on the 30th. It's an interesting concept. They're actually a Singapore dev team, and without giving too much away, masks are an item of power, and your protagonist is returning to his home country after being exiled and after his brother's death. And there's a lot of subplot and intrigue, and it's beautiful. It's hand-painted, and it's something that really sucked me in. Normally, I'll play a taste of something on stream and then maybe come back to it later, but this is like, I'm going to finish this game. I don't care what else I do tomorrow. But it's gorgeous. It's hand-painted. And there's a lot of subplot that involves gender and sexual orientation and a very purposeful statement from the development team. So... Yeah, so it's out now. If you can get it, definitely play it. It's on Steam. I don't know about a plan for consoles, but there is controller support on PC. And I've been playing Elder Scrolls Legends. It's actually sucked me in more than Hearthstone has, probably because I'm a nerd for Elder Scrolls. I know nothing about Warcraft, so sorry, y'all. So that is what I've been playing in my limited free time. And sadly... Really sadly, because I enjoy chatting with you, Mike. It is time to end the episode. But before we do, where can people find you and follow your work online?
The best place to find me is at GuySmiley22 on Twitter. GuySmiley22. That's where I tweet a bunch. There isn't really anything else that I can point to. You always mentioned the SoundCloud, which it's very grateful for. I hope and intend to have my own website sometime soon, because that would be a very good thing for everything I do, but that doesn't exist at the moment. Follow along on Twitter. We have fun. I enjoy Twitter a lot.
And David, where can people find you?
I can be found most easily on Twitter at Red Conversation. I also have Patreon, which is also Red Conversation. Patreon.com/Red Conversation. And my personal website that I never update is davidlreeves.com. And Tanya?
I'm pretty much CypherTier everywhere, so if you find me on Twitter, my website, Twitch, and Patreon, if you look for CypherTier, which is CypherOftyr, that's where you'll find me. And with that, we are done with episode 70. Next time we get behind the mic, we'll be talking with Dave Fennoy. Many of you may recognize him as the voice behind Lee of The Walking Dead, also Lucius Fox, in Telltale's Batman and the other Batman game that was a terrible audio... terrible PC port. So, think of some questions. or by the time you hear this, we will have recorded the episode. But that's who we're talking to next, is Dave Fenoy. And with that, we'll see you in a week. Bye, y'all.
Thank you. Bye.
All right.
We should start counting how many times the cat, either one of our cats, has tried to...